Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Middlebury College alum John McHenry had a shoebox in his California home full of family letters from the Civil War era. Inspired by a gift of documents to his alma mater, McHenry decided Middlebury College was also the right place for his collection. This past summer, he flew them to Vermont himself on the occasion of his college reunion. McHenry gave 85 documents, including about 80 letters, to the college. I recently visited with Rebecca Irwin, Director of Collections and Archives at Middlebury College, to find out what these documents reveal about the lives of young Vermont soldiers in the Civil War.
And the dates of the letters are generally between 1860 and 1865, generally written by two brothers, John and George Quilty, to their sister Eliza. There was another brother, Benjamin Quilty, who received letters. He was living in Rutland, but that their sister Eliza was living in Brandon. And they include letters between the brothers and their sister, the brothers back to their mother, and another friend who we don't exactly know who he is, writing both to their sister and to the brothers.
And what were these brothers doing? They were soldiers for the North?
Both of the brothers were soldiers, along with their friend, and they were writing both from camps and training in Burlington, but then as far as Virginia and New Orleans, back and forth, stationed back in Burlington, and then as they shipped out. And some of the letters, of course, don't tell us where they're from.
And did both the brothers survive and their friend?
They did not, sadly. One of the brothers, whose name was George H. Quilty, died at age 20. The other brother did survive, and we believe the friend did as well.
What's the content of these letters? You've read through at least some of them. You said 80 letters, so what are they talking about?
What we have found as we've read the letters is that they cover everything from the everyday mundane duties of camp. The brothers write home about how good the food is and how bad the food is. They write back about death and disease and just waiting. There was a lot of sitting around and waiting for bad weather, waiting until they found their orders for the next day. Also, many of the letters describe the politics of the day. So we have one letter in particular where one brother writes about old Abe's decisions that he'll be making about a draft, and another where a brother writes about the injuries that happened on the battlefield and another soldier's loss of limbs. So they're quite graphic in detail.
Would you mind reading one of the letters? You have them here.
I'll read one that's from Hammond, the friend of the family, to Luke. It's from a camp near White Oak Church, Virginia, March 21st, 1868. Friend Luke, I sit down this morning to write you a few lines to let you know that I'm alive and kicking. I hope this will find you the same. That was a tip-top picture you sent me. I will send you one of home manufacture got up expressly for the purpose. What have you been doing to the soldiers' wives up there in Vermont? Almost all the married men that has been home on furlough have come back with long faces. Some found their wives had run away with other fellows. Others found their wives considerably stouter around the waist than when they left home. But I don't know of any more patriotic business than raising young soldiers when there are so much needed by the government. There's no knowing how long this war will last, and the best way to ensure success in the long run is to keep the mills at home to work. I suppose I will see you down here pretty soon after old Abe makes his next call for troops, which I suppose he will make very soon. I guess you are nailed this time, Luke.
And then the letter actually goes on. This is, looks like quite a long letter. So Luke was home in Vermont at this point?
Luke was, what, as far as we know, Luke was in Rutland, Vermont, and Hammond, his friend and a friend of the family, was writing from Virginia, from a camp station in Virginia. And you're right, the letter goes on for four pages. And parts of the letter, again, he goes on after the passage I just read to talk about the food that they're eating and that they are getting fat on beef. We are living first rate here now. We have all the soft bread we can eat, lots of potatoes and fresh beef. We are getting fat as hogs, which we resemble very much, which seems a strange thought during the Civil War. But it's one of the fascinating things about these letters is as much that we think we're familiar with the Civil War, when you read intimate stories like this, particularly from young men in their 20s, and there's something I think even more intimate about them, knowing that they're from Vermont, so close to home, it seems that you learn something new each time you read them. And I've now read this letter 3 or 4 times only today.
Have you read all of the letters?
I have not read all the letters. One of the things we found when the collection came was that some of the letters are quite faded. The letters are in a combination of pencil and pen in ink from the time. And the pencil has actually done a little bit better over the 100 years or so, 200 years. The pen is fading. So we're actually scanning the letters right now and using some digital techniques to try to bring out the letters that we can't read.
You have a letter here underneath that is in very flowery writing. I assume each of the letter writers has a different style, but whose is this? It almost looks like a very formal invitation that you'd get to, you know, a ball or to a wedding.
We don't know who some of them are from. We have some letters that are miscellaneous, and this is one of them. But you're absolutely right. One of the brothers might write very differently depending on who he's writing to. And so I have another example of a letter that we're looking at that is from George Quilty, one of the brothers, to his mother. And he's doodled on it and decorated it, so all of his letters have the heads of eagles on them. And he doesn't write the same way when he writes to his brothers, so he added a flourish when he wrote home to his mother.
You mentioned that some of these letters, the ink has faded and they're very hard to read, so you're scanning them in and using this new technology to bring out the pigment or to bring out the writing. Are you planning to digitize all of these? Can people who are not connected to Middlebury see them someday, some way?
We are. So we're in the process of digitizing all of these letters, and we will make them available. And it was also part of our agreement with the donor. He'll receive digital copies of all of his letters so that he'll have them for his own collection. And that's actually quite common, not only at Middlebury, but the libraries and archives across the state. We're all spending time creating digital copies of the things in our collections because they don't exist anywhere else. And not everyone can come visit Barrie or Middlebury or Burlington. And it's important for us to share these letters beyond the state of Vermont so that others can learn from our story and to preserve them. In fact, as we can see, because these letters are in front of us, some are quite fragile and falling apart. And a digital copy won't replace the original, but it will help us reduce the wear and tear on these originals.
Would you mind leaving us with an excerpt from one other of the letters that you think is particularly interesting or colorful?
Sure. One of the things that we hope these letters will do now that they're at Middlebury is serve a purpose for our students. Sometimes they can feel very distant to us, and even as we're looking at these letters, they're in cursive, but sometimes it's quite hard to read, and you have to spend a lot of time with the letters, almost deciphering them and translating them, even though they're in English. And our students, many who were born in the 1990s, struggle with reading cursive, as we all do when we're looking at 18th and 19th century handwriting. But some of the letters are so direct and written by brothers to a sister when they were in their 20s. I think they can't help but speak to young students also in their 20s. I don't think that a Middlebury student today can help but feel how real this history is when reading a letter from a brother to a sister talking about the mundane details of his life, whether or not it was a war experience or just a letter written back home. I think it's also very meaningful for us to have letters like this to share with our own students, because it will let them think about their own habits and the last time they wrote a letter, and in particular to think that these letters have survived over 200 years. And I think it's quite humbling for our own college students to think about what they're leaving behind to tell their own story. But here's a letter from Burlington, April 18th, 1862. And this is written by George Quilty to his mother. And he writes, "Dear Mother, I thought I would write to you a few lines to let you know how I was getting along. I am well and doing well. We are coming through Monday next anyway, so I can be at the depot. I hope you are well, and all the rest. I was glad I brought that provision, as I get most starved to death. George A. Quilty. This seems to be a terrible letter to write back to your mother to tell. So George is telling his mother he's doing just fine and he's starving to death. No mother wants to hear from her son that way, I think, in 1862 or today.
Well, Rebecca, thank you so much for showing me these letters. Just to see them is kind of amazing, and to hear the words that they wrote to one another. So I appreciate you taking the time to show me.
We appreciate sharing them with you.
Rebecca Irwin is the Director of Collections and Archives at Middlebury College. She was talking about a collection of about 80 letters from the Civil War era that were recently donated to the college. We have scans of a few of those letters up at vpr.net.